WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your tour guy for this conversation for the next hour and 40-ish minutes, 45 minutes. What do we do here? We talk, and we bring in a variety of guests. Yes, it's different than the original Monday Night Talk, where the host could talk about one thing for the entire the entirety of the show. What we try to do is we break it up, and we try to have a variety of conversations, make it kind of a magazine-style type of conversation. My guest is here and will be joining us in just a moment as part of the opening salvo. But later this first hour, we will speak with Mr. Richard Rosen. He is one of our fantastic sponsors, and we will chat with him about his upcoming road race just in 6 days. If you have not registered, if you've not been involved with a road race like this, then you might want to tune in for some of the details. Maybe you need the information. Once again, we'll share that with you. Hour number two, we're going to have a gentleman on who is formerly a school committee member. He was the chair for 15 years in the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District. And the purpose of having him on is that recently, as of a couple of weeks ago, I supplied the information, broke the news here on 95.9 WATD in regards to the $14.4 million budget deficit for fiscal 23 for the Brockton Public School System, as they're trying to figure out what the hell happened. They have their superintendent right now is on medical leave. Two of their financial people, CFO and deputy CFO, are also suspended without pay, or they're right now they're on leave as well. And it's a messy ordeal as they're trying to figure out where the hell that $14.4 million. Now, schools have opened, and there's been barely a bleep on the radar. Nonetheless, this is a guy, so Bob Hayes, we'll chat with him. You know, what goes into the budget process? How could something like this happen? He basically will be our expert. Not that he's going to know exactly what happened in Brockton, but, you know, maybe some of the shortfalls. He knows some of the temporary money and how budgets, the school budgets are funded. So the idea is to have that conversation with him. So that's coming up in hour number two. But right now, we turn our focus to yet another state representative, another state official, elected official, who we are proud to have on a regular basis. We have a great rotation of the legislative delegation down here on the South Shore, Mr. Dave DeCoste, state representative, representing the 5th Plymouth District, and he's in on a regular basis. Representative, how are you, sir?
Glad to be here. Thank you, Kevin. Always interesting to talk to you, and we always have a fun time and get a lot discussed, so glad to be here.
Well, so I have targeted a specific conversation with you. Mm-hmm. Driving around the South Shore, I'm starting to notice lawn signs pop up in regards to the opposition to HD, I believe that stands for House Docket 4420. And I thought I would get your kind of take on this, and maybe you're hearing from your constituents, whether they're in your district or maybe individuals who are out of district, who, if they know that you're an elected official, want to bend your ear, especially if there's somebody who are their gun owners and they're you know, proper gun owners and their concerns. How are you?
Well, good. You're correct. We're hearing a lot about that. HD, House Docket, right? Correct? Because we're still, I guess, to get to the beginning, when a bill is introduced, it's a House Docket, and then it gets assigned to a committee and becomes an H and gets a different number, which is sometimes confusing because people write to you about H whatever, and they use H4420 when it's actually HD 4420. We've got a new number. Haven't got a new number yet because the House and the Senate have a disagreement of whether the House can put it into the Judiciary Committee, or the Senate wants it to go to Public Safety, which traditionally I believe most of these gun control bills have gone to. So we still haven't resolved that. But yes, there's HD 4420 is creating quite a stir, and it's fairly comprehensive, in my view, largely probably unconstitutional. And so we'll see how this works out. But right now, introduced a while ago, I will say they were quite fair. They brought us all together because of the number of concerns in two groups. The House is broken up into four divisions. So they had the first one and Division 2 on one day, and then the following day, Division 3 and 4. All the Republicans are in Division 2. So they had a large number of Democrats, and all the Republicans followed the next day by all Democrats, and they spoke to the bill, and suffice it to say, I think probably most people would agree that there were more questions raised than answers given.
So my next question, and I asked this tongue-in-cheek, I asked this very carefully, knowing that we have been seeing a rise around the country in gun violence, and the number of fatalities due to this violence. Is this a knee-jerk reaction here in the Commonwealth? Is this a knee-jerk reaction by proponents who may be pushing for such legislation?
Well, I won't ascribe motives. I do not know. I think there might be a little of that on the part of some, and others have been trying to push this exact type of bill for many terms. Mm. So it's kind of, if you actually read the bill, it's kind of confusing. Many provisions are ambiguous. As a matter of fact, I would steer people, if you want a primer on it, the police chief in Plymouth wrote a very comprehensive commentary and posted it on Facebook outlining all of the problems of this bill. And there was there've been subsequently a number of them from other police chiefs. It's going to cause a lot of problems, and we can go through each section. Problems for people who, well, it's one of the concerns from every police officer. By the way, haven't spoken to a single police officer, active or retired, or anyone in the sheriff's department, any type of sheriffs, because in my district I have over 300 Boston police officers, active or retired, and their families. And I haven't had a single individual, and in addition, Weymouth, Braintree, in addition to Hanover, Norwell, Hanson, Rockland. So we have a lot of police, and no one has called me in support of this bill. I had a lot of concerns, because I'll give you one quick example. The way it is written, it would essentially prohibit any retired police officer, any retired corrections officer, or their family members, because it prohibits everyone, from carrying concealed. Now, over the course of the career of a typical police officer, and of course, corrections officers who are on a day-to-day basis dealing quite frequently with some very dangerous people who may sometimes get out of prison and may want to come visit them, many of them have good reason to want to carry concealed and have firearms handy, by the way, and their spouses and their families. And the way this bill is written, it would make it very difficult to do that. Matter of fact, it would, because of the new criteria for determining places that are off limits for firearms, basically everywhere is off limits for firearms as per this bill, unless it's posted otherwise, to include your home. So you would have to go in, if someone were to carry, you say you had a retired police officer who's a friend who often carried, and he came to your home, and it did not say the Tachi residence is open to gun ownership or gun, it would presume to be, a Tachi residence would be presumed to be a gun-free zone, and he or she would be guilty of a felony in taking it in your home, the way this bill is written. How about that?
What's perplexing is that criminals don't look to follow the law when they break the law.
Well, precisely. And it would, you know, someone who regularly, and what I think of is maybe church attendance, because people, many people regularly attend the same mass, the same service, attend synagogue at the same time every week. And the way this bill is written, you would know that give Officer Tachi, okay, it attends whatever is goes to his place of worship on X time, and you would be vulnerable because you would be following this law, so they'd know you would not be carrying. And by the way, I think, as an aside, there is something to be said when I have police chiefs, retired police officers. I think it adds to public safety to have those individuals. We had a number of people in the State House retired who were carrying, and I thought it was a good idea that we had these people carrying, because it adds to public safety. You have people who were retired state police officers. We had a retired detective from the South Coast, a police chief from up on the North Shore. That's fine in my mind that they, I'm glad, and I hope they still do carry. I think it adds to public safety. And to your point about the bad guys, they don't know who's around and who may carry. I have a retired police officer in Hanover who called me, and she, again, was responsible for putting many bad people in jail. And they have an honest concern and a need to be able to carry, and their spouses. Because, again, you don't know when some of these people get out of jail, and one of the top things on their list is to come and find you. As the police officer who put them in jail, or someone out of Tim Cruz's office, or someone out of the sheriff, Sheriff McDonald's, deputies who might have transported them, the corrections officers who might have dealt with them all the time. All of those people have legitimate concerns. And we can also get into, by the way, men, women who have restraining officers. Jamie Catano is probably the best, the Catano decision. I don't know if you can remember that. Back in 2018, the Supreme Court actually looked at the stun gun provisions. By the way, this bill treats stun guns just as they would regular firearms, which is remarkable, in my opinion, because many individuals, particularly females, aren't comfortable with having guns in the home, but they are comfortable with a stun gun. Jamie Catano's situation was this. She had an abusive boyfriend, numerous restraining orders, which proved absolutely useless. This abusive boyfriend confronted her outside of her work environment, and she had a stun gun. It was unlicensed. She was tried and convicted of having the stun gun. She brandished it. And that was enough to get her arrested. Now, this was appealed to the state Supreme Court, and then subsequently appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts initially upheld the law. It got to the U.S. Supreme Court, where unanimously, by the way, all of the liberals and all of the conservatives on that court said Supreme Court decision in Massachusetts was incorrect, and they remanded it and pretty strongly. If you read Justice Alito's concurring opinion, pretty strongly. And I think even those who were inclined to take a less expansive view of the Second Amendment would at least allow for the fact that local people, particularly those, again, who are in fear of their safety, ought to have the ability to carry something as simple as a stun gun. And it's non-lethal. And yet, under the old law and under this law, again, you'd have to go through all of the training. Not something, by the way, we have any number of states where you can buy these over the counter, and it's not a problem. And here in Massachusetts, we treat this as though it were any other firearm. I think it's incorrect.
Again, if you just tuned in, opening conversation with the state representative, Dave DeCost. We're talking the House Docket Bill 4420. It has yet been designated an actual bill number. It's just kind of waxing and waning for that to happen. Couple more minutes talking about this. I almost feel like maybe we should have dedicated a longer segment, that maybe we can go around and round and round on this, because I want to be respectful for any individuals that took the time to craft, to put language to a bill. But do you feel as though that this is just haphazardly, was this haphazardly put together? Was this the proverbial throw it against the wall and see if it's going to stick, or at least let's at least be the state that at least tries to look at it in different angles. Even if the legislation is defeated, doesn't make it out of a hearing, a committee or a hearing. Is it? Would you say that this is in that realm or not so much?
There's a large school of thought, and by the way, even among Republicans and Democrats in the House and in the Senate, very skeptical of this. Because, again, we have a number of people who are in law enforcement. This bill strips their ability to carry as well. And you do hear that a lot. I looked at it in my first reading, and it's a long read, and I'm not a lawyer. So I really rely on the House, the Gun Owners Action League, took a long, but the House leadership, and I think I sent it to you, the Republican leadership had our analysts take a look at it.
Yep.
It is really, it's really interesting, but it looked as though somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bloomberg organization had a hand in this, just the way it's written. There are some way things that are just so divorced from reality, let's say, and I'll give you an example of that. The gun dealers here, people who deal in firearms, we have, you know, in Weymouth along 58 down in Plimpton, there are a bunch. All of them would be required, their current facilities, even if under lock and key in a secure building with an alarm system, under this law that would become inadequate to meet the standards of this law, and every day they would have to move all of their inventory into a safe. I mean, the investments in safe space alone would be enormous. So the under lock and key in a secure building with an alarm system would no longer be adequate. That would probably put most firearms dealers in the state out of business. Likewise, the new requirements for home ownership are again, probably mostly unconstitutional, number one. But even if they were deemed constitutional, you would have to have some type of say. It would be very good for safety, we'll put it that. And by the way, and tie up and accomplish very little, because the problem is not guns being stolen out of people's homes. If anything, the reverse is true. If you have something and you have a reason to have a handgun or a rifle, some reason to defend your home, you're not going to be able to do it. Everything's locked up.
Is there provisions within this bill or anything that you have seen just by looking at it early on here about dealing with ghost guns or anybody who is 3D printing parts for guns? Because, you know, ghost guns are also an issue as well.
Yeah, there are whole sorts of engraving requirements so that the new, and again, that's an interesting, 3D printing has really...
It is
revolutionizing a lot of things. You can now print replacement parts, you know, for all sorts of things that you never could. It's remarkable.
That's awesome.
Yes, you can also print out firearms, and there's some concern about that. Again, not a big concern among the law enforcement people I talk to. They're more concerned. I know this is not the issue, but they're more concerned about the overwhelming amounts of fentanyl on people who are coming again. In this case, I know it's a subject for another time.
Yeah.
But you know, the onslaught of people from everywhere and every place, unvetted, just coming in here, and by the way, the amount of drugs that they're bringing and drug contacts and circulating, ghost guns really don't. I don't hear much about them.
Not a blip on the radar.
Yeah, not from anyone we deal with. And as I say, I deal with the police pretty closely. I try to make it a point because I believe in what they do. And, you know, I work with the state police unions, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, certainly the police in Hanson, Hanover, Rockland, and Norwell. And I try to remain in tune and sign on to everything they think and be a legislative voice on their behalf, because I will tell you, there are certainly some folks, they don't couch themselves this way, but there are certainly some folks in the legislature who are working against their best interests. I will put it that way.
Okay. You know, the way I kind of see with what's going on, you know, with this, our nation, and when it comes to gun laws, and knowing that there are some states that are very lenient when it comes to ownership of a gun or a weapon compared to Massachusetts, I feel that Massachusetts has always led the way in many areas when it comes to making sure that there are laws on the books that are going to protect the citizens, and that, but let's be clear here that individuals who are looking to harm a large group of individuals. They're looking for people who are distracted, whether they're in educational facilities or entertainment plazas, to take advantage and try to have mass casualties. And a lot of times they're not looking to obey the law. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. We got, again, we're speaking with State Representative Dave DeCoste, kind enough to be here with us this evening. I want to take a couple of moments here while we got 3 or 4 minutes left to talk about something that I feel is it's a growing problem, and it's under the radar, but it could be something that's targeted of your supplemental budgets, in whether it's already become a theme or it's going to be kind of a target when it comes to the immigrant situation, the immigrants that are being flown here, that are being housed here. You know, these are people who are illegally in the country looking for a way to be here legally. I know that you've been kind of vocal about it. What's the latest that you're hearing? And probably my prime question to you, and I apologize if I'm asking you this as whether you're a D or an R, just as an individual, we look at the current administration and how they're kind of getting adapted to a lot of the situations and problems and trying to problem solve, and looking at the previous administration. Are you seeing vast differences as to how this is being handled?
Yeah, some differences. I mean, I you know, and I have not been shy, even within my own party. I think I'm probably one of the more vocal people in terms of I don't believe in accommodating people who don't belong here to begin with. Mm. It is interesting that most of these people who are claiming asylum go all the way through Mexico. And, that you know, if they're fleeing their nation, that's where they should stop. And traditionally, that's where they should stop. But somehow they're coming here. It is extraordinarily expensive. When they were as we were saying, there were about 10,000 people. It was costing the state $149 million. Well, now the number is up to 20,000. And as you said, they're being dropped here, dropped being there. Interestingly enough, the communities that tend to be very liberal and quite wealthy don't seem to be getting their share. While places like Taunton and Woburn and West Springfield seem to be getting more than their share, which I find puzzling, because if you look in, you would think that the folks in Brookline and Newton and Wellesley and Cambridge, just by virtue of maybe their ideological bent, would be willing to welcome in 200 or 300 families, but they don't seem to be welcoming in at all. And I did ask the lieutenant governor, by the way, whether anyone who had come up and taken her up on her offer to have these families in her home, and I had expected, you know, a number, 50 or 100. The way she couched it, she said they are talking to faith groups that might take one or two, which led me to believe that nobody...
One or two families or one or two people?
One or two families, maybe. Oh, okay. That's the way I understood it. Mm. But it led me to believe that nobody's taken her up on her offer, which honestly surprised me.
Is it that because we are enduring tough times, or we're entering tough times right now? So folks right now, I mean, look at the time of year that we're at right now.
Well, I think there's a little bit of, you know, people tend to be quite generous in the abstract, but when it comes to the concrete, and folks who are very, you know, don't seem to be bothered at all that we don't enforce our immigration laws, when it comes to actually subsidizing on their own part, and, you know, I had assumed that people would have, accessory dwellings, a room over the garage, I don't know, right. And take families in. I know it happened in World War II. And even in Norwell, one of the largest houses, the Donovan House, Mrs. Donovan had a refugee family there from the Finno-Russian War, the Winter War. She had a Finnish family there. Not unusual within the town. There were a number of children from England. There were a number of folks who had come from Western Europe who were living there in Little Norwell and the rest of the South Shore as refugees. And yet nobody is standing up, and the federal administration's strategy seems to be approaching large, maybe, hotels on the seedier side, let's say that, and they offer them quite generous provisions to take the refugees in, and the local authorities are notified after the fact. It is proving extraordinarily expensive. And keep in mind, this is the new we were probably spending between health care, lodging, which is tough to gauge, education. We're probably spending somewhere in the order of $1-3 billion a year out of our $56 billion budget. All right. Now the cost is soaring. And the lieutenant governor has alluded, I guess she alluded during our meeting, she alluded once and now I guess publicly last week sometimes, she was talking about possibly having to raise taxes to accommodate that. I don't believe in that, especially the benchmarks, as you know, we've spoken about before. The budget benchmarks are actually coming in under what we expected. So we're going to have some fiscal problems going forward.
So I would ask you this, and this will be my final question. Mm. Knowing that the Commonwealth is already dealing with a homelessness issue domestically, how is this causing issues for those who born, raised, live here and are struggling to find housing compared to folks who are newly introduced into Massachusetts and are being accommodated? Is there a pecking order where these individuals are foreign to our land, so we need to take care of them so they can realize the American dream? And where are the individuals who, again, who've paid taxes, maybe they've fallen on hard times, are they still being taken care of as well, or are they being more or less shelved?
Well, we know that, again, last week and the week before that, we had incidences in Cape Cod where you had our citizens being evicted to accommodate this. Again, the federal government is providing quite generous terms, at least for now, for hotels to accommodate our legal immigrants or illegal immigrants, however you want to view it. But they are absolutely displacing individuals. And by the way, if you talk to some of the business people in Boston, they will tell you that there are now fewer hotels available for conventions. This is going to absolutely have an effect going forward, because if you can't house people in business, people in conventions, and they're taking up the less expensive hotels. So it's great for hotel owners, not good for the average citizen.
If folks want to reach out with any of your constituents, constituent mm-hmm. service, best way for folks to be able to reach out to your friend?
Well, you can contact us over the internet, our Facebook, I think most people, but it's also david.decost at mahouse.gov. And they can look on the WATD website, because there's always a way to contact me there. So that's probably your best bet.
My goodness, what a great...
And I also, by the way, have office hours in the districts the first three Fridays and the second Tuesdays of every month. So come visit me down the Rockland Library on the second Tuesday from 6 to 7. It's what a beautiful library. My favorite office hours.
He is State Representative Dave DeCoste. He has been our guest for what a robust conversation. What a great way to kind of kick off the show. Talking about these two situations that are pending, not only up at the Beacon Hill, but also around the Commonwealth. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Attention, military veterans, friends, and family members. You're invited to a tremendous free day of fun, food, entertainment, networking, and resource gathering at the Brockton Veterans Expo Benefits and Job Fair, Saturday, September 23rd, from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Join fellow veterans and military families for a free barbecue grill fest. Check out the military vehicle displays and enjoy the live music and free food. Get a VA disability claim established. Learn about all your state and VA benefit programs, or find the perfect job at the veteran-friendly job fair while the kids enjoy pony rides, bounce house, and other activities at the Kids Zone. If you ever served in uniform, this event is for you. Don't miss the Brockton Veterans Expo and Job Fair, Saturday, September 23rd, at the Boston VA's Brockton campus, 940 Belmont Street in Brockton. This event is free, and veterans of all ages and their families are encouraged to attend. For more information, search for the Brockton Veterans Expo at eventbrite.com.
Are you ready to run and party? Hi, I'm Richard Rosen, owner of McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's in Whitman. The annual McGuigan's Pub 5K is coming up on Sunday, September 24th. This certified 5K course starts at noon at McGuigan's Pub on Washington Street in downtown Whitman. T-shirts will be given to the first 300 runners who sign up, and awards will be given for the top winners in 8 age divisions. Stay after the run for an outdoor post-race block party at McGuigan's. Come to run, stay to party. All proceeds will benefit local charities. To register online, go to McGuigan'sPub.com.
Quirk Kia South, offering the same great customer sales and service you expect from a Quirk dealership. Come in, browse their well-stocked lot, and drive home in a brand new Kia, like the 2023 Kia Forte or the 2023 Kia Sportage. And the Quirk Service Department will be available to you for the lifetime of your vehicle. Quirk Kia South works for you. Quirk Kia, 923 Plain Street, Marshfield, just off Route 3 at the new exit 27. Visit QuirkKiaMarshfield.com.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
So the conversation continues here on Monday Night Talk, 959WATD. Don't forget also 1460 AM WBMS in Brockton. Joining us, our premier sponsor and occasional co-host of Monday Night Talk, Mr. Richard Rosen. So we want to give him an opportunity once again to remind folks, if you're somebody who enjoys road races and you maybe it's been a slow year for you and you're looking for maybe a final road race or two, then you might want to check out this coming Sunday's road race. Richard, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Well, it's nice to be here, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. So, again, I'm sure you're like counting the days, and usually things get fast and furious, and you know, you start getting a lot of conversations with folks in regards to the upcoming road race, where you're like, I thought we've publicized this enough, and people still asking me. For folks who don't know about your road race, which you have done 13 years in a row,
this will be the 13th. Yeah, we took a year off during COVID,
right?
So yeah, we've done it. Actually, this will be the 13th year.
And this isn't just your ordinary, you put a bib on, you're off at the start of the gun, you get back, they give you the divisions. No, because they want you to stick around afterwards, because there's going to be some fun festivities that's going to take place as well, correct?
Yeah, we have a great after party. After the 5K, we have a disc jockey, we have face painters, and this year the Patriots are playing the Jets at 1 o'clock, so we've got both restaurants, and hopefully if the weather's nice, the windows will be open, and you'll be able to enjoy the festivities and watch a little football at the same time.
Yeah, knowing that, you know, the dynamic of the Jets has drastically changed, makes this a little bit more of a fun. I mean, you know, the Jets have a championship defense. Unfortunately, their offense is not where it's at. But looking back at the road race, this, folks, is a USATF certified 5K course, and again, it starts at McGuigan's Pub. Have you had enough people sign up to be able to? Are there any more free shirts, or are those all gone?
No, there'll be some shirts.
Okay.
There'll be some shirts. We have had a number of people sign up. We base it on last year, and we're ahead of last year. We have the Abington Colonial Running Club is back involved with this race this year, so I expect some more runners. But no, we give T-shirts out to the first few hundred people. Those are those tech T-shirts. They're really nice. So, no, I anticipate a fairly decent crowd for this year's race. And, again, it starts at noon at McGuigan's Pub. And it starts sharp at noon and runs through the streets of Whitman, ends back up at the pub. And then the festivities begin. You know, there's pre-registration right now. You can go onto the pub website at McGuigan'sPub.com, and you can register online, and you can register the day of as well.
I was going to say, it's worth noting that I believe that race day registration actually begins around 10:30 a.m.
That's correct. Yeah, it does. It begins at 10:30. We try to get everybody over to the starting line by about 10 minutes to 12. We have the national anthem is sung, and the gunshot starts at noon sharp. And, you know, there's male, female, and we give out trophies to, I think there's seven age groups, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, starting up to 10 years old, and then 11 to 14, 15 to 18, 19 to 29, 30 to 39, 40, 49, 50 to 59, and then over 60. So it's a really fun day. And we serve, you know, there's, you can buy hot dogs, hamburgers, and stuff outside, as well as we give a free beer to, we give a little ticket to everybody that signs up. That's of age, of course. So when they finish the race, they can have themselves a nice beer for free. It's just a great day. And as you know, all the proceeds go to charity. Every penny that we've ever raised has gone to local charities. And we give to pretty much anybody that asks. We donate money in the neighborhood. A lot of the money has gone to the Whitman Food Pantry, Special Olympics, you know, local baseball teams and soccer teams and Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Camp Sunshine. We've given, we've spread the money around a lot. Disabled and limbless veterans, the American Legion is, I'm just trying to think of some of the causes that we've given to, and there's been many. And this year we're going to donate a good portion of our money to the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation. So because of something that had happened locally and people that we knew, we're going to make a donation to that as well. I mean, we've given to local fire departments, police departments, brain aneurysm funds. I mean, you know, we've just really spread it around. And, you know, $150, $200, $400 goes a long way to some of these groups. And, you know, we're very proud of what we do. And we've given back over $65,000. In the history of this race. This year will probably be over, we'll hit that $70,000 mark. So I think it's pretty impressive for a small pub in a small town.
How are you, being a community guy, you're somebody who is usually somehow involved with a lot of things that go on in the community, and you do it with a lot of pride. How important is it to be able to give back and to be able to host special events that makes your community of Whitman a special and a place that folks want to travel to?
It gives me extreme happiness, pride. We've been doing it a long time. You know, I'm a townie. I've lived in Whitman my entire life. I'm actually third generation, and I love Whitman. It's a great small town. It's a great community, and I try to do as much as I can. I believe that you really need to be involved in what goes on in your community, and I've tried to do that over the years, whether it be serving on a bylaw study committee or lately it's the CPA committee, or, you know, I was on the Board of Selectmen. We ran Winterfest for 20 years, built a playground, and we, you know, we did a lot of things. To me, it's probably the most important thing that you could do is just to give back to the community.
Anything we haven't touched upon in regards to the road race and the location, and, you know, that we've talked about the prizes, anything that we want to at least leave with the folks? Again, coming up this Sunday, September 24th, you want to make sure that you go online and register. If not, you can register at 10:30 a.m. That's when registration opens for this race. But anything we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I would like to say that you don't necessarily have to run the race to come down and enjoy the festivities. You know, if you want to just come and have a beer and watch the game and see what's going on in the area, you're welcome. If you have some kids and you want to bring them down and get their face painted, everything, you know, that stuff's free. So, you know, we just invite everybody to come down and enjoy the day with us.
Again, we've been speaking with Richard Rosen. He is the proud owner of McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's, as we're talking again. Reminding you, if you're somebody who likes road races, you know, the it's getting cooler and the number of road races are dwindling, this might be your last opportunity to sign up. And again, as Richard said, you don't have to necessarily have to run the road race. You can stop by for the festivities, or heck, if you're into it, check out one of the restaurants. You will not be disappointed whether you go to the patio or you go to McGuigan's Pub to sample some of their fare. Is that accurate?
It is very accurate.
Excellent. Well, Richard, I want to thank you so much for your time, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again in a couple of weeks.
Kevin, thank you very much, and it's always a pleasure.
We are going to step aside. I can't believe it. The first hour is gone. It's gone. If you missed it, you have to wait for the podcast. Hour number two, straight ahead. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here at 95.9 WATD. All right, second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And we were going to have, I know earlier in the show, opening the show, we usually kind of give you a rundown as to who's going to be on. And so we had to shift gears. Our guest could not join us, Bob Hayes, but he will be on at a later date. Bob has always been a valuable guest. But in changing gears, if anything, we've actually we've improved upon the conversation and the guest, a gentleman who's been on. A lot of my guests who come on, if you haven't realized it by now, they are multifaceted. They are able to share conversations, not only in one particular area or one particular topic. They're not one-trick ponies, but they're able to talk about a variety of things. A gentleman who's joining me right now, Keith Hayes. Keith has been on for various items and topics, mostly, I'll say, sports or anything that is in the podcast area. But we've also talked city issues, the city of Brockton. Again, don't forget, we are on 95.9 WATD, the South Shores radio station. But we also are on 1460 AM WBMS, and that's where Keith and I, way back in the day, did many a radio show known as WBET, then WXBR, and now, like I said, it's the latest call letters is now WBMS. Keith, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, Kevin.
So the reason for having Keith on, Keith basically will basically be able to kind of talk in two different conversations. The first, as I had mentioned early on this radio station, I was able to kind of break the news in regards to about the city of Brockton, the Brockton Public School System having a $14.4 million deficit for fiscal 23. That was the last fiscal year that ended June 30th. The guy who was in the trenches that night when a lot of the news was breaking and shared some of his resources, Keith was the guy there when they called an emergency executive session just a couple of weeks ago. So he's going to talk a little bit. He actually last Thursday attended the most recent school committee meeting and had a chance to kind of hear what the members had to say as to the latest. As we know that Mike Thomas right now is out on medical leave, and you also have financial people who are Aldo Petronio has been put on leave, as well as his deputy. I don't know if his deputy is still on leave or his deputy has been released from his job, but we'll get to that in a moment. But we are also on the eve of the city's preliminary elections, because city elections every 2 years. So Keith is going to be able to kind of talk to both of these. Let's, Keith, first talk a little bit about the situation with the Brockton Public School Systems. What are they talking about in regards to trying to solve this? I'm sure that the whole meeting did not necessarily focus on that deficit, and I'm sure that there were other things that they were dealing with the current fiscal year. But what were you able to glean out of that?
Well, actually, that meeting that happened last Thursday night, it really did focus on this $14 million issue. The first thing that I noticed when I was there is that the public attendance dropped off a lot. That spoke volumes as we move forward, as we head into September and November, which we'll talk about with the elections. But the majority of people who were there were people who have, vested into this budget issue. That was the first thing that I noticed being at this meeting. The second thing was is that they really kept this meeting about this issue, about the audit process that's about to happen, and they voted to make sure that there are going to be three residents who are going to shadow the auditors during this. And these three people that they're going to pick cannot be connected to any elected official in any way. They have to be a resident of Brockton, and they're going to start this process ASAP. They've come up with a way that they're going to determine. It's going to be three questions asked, and then one final question where they can give like a short answer. And then Tony Rodriguez suggested that one of the ways to pull these people so it's transparent is if you say like you have 50 people that you want, you're going to put those 50 people in the hat and pull those three names out of the hat so it's transparent. It doesn't look like somebody's picking somebody. So the school committee is doing a very good job with trying to keep things open and transparent. The big comment of the night came from Tony Rodriguez when people were kind of accusing them of trying to slow this down for elections and this and that. Tony stepped right up and he said that, you know what, I'm not focused on speed. I'm focused on accuracy. And that's exactly what you want the auditors to do. In my fair opinion, I feel like it definitely won't be done by Tuesday, of course, because we're one day before. And my feeling is that this audit will be done before November. And then we will make our determinations in November as to what should happen with either school committee members or city council members or whatever. One of the things they did was they brought a gentleman in who is now the acting chief financial officer. Okay. While Aldo Petrino was out on his administrative leave. One of the things that really stuck out to me was that he provided the school committee and the mayor with a report that is derived from this software that they use for the budget. And in this report, everything that was kind of in Chris Correa's emails was in this report quarter to quarter. You could see that, you know, that this was coming. This $14 million was coming. Tony Rodriguez spoke on behalf of the school committee, and he had said, well, here's a question that I have. He says, we've been asking, and we weren't getting it. And now here we all are, and it's sitting here in front of us. Now, one of the unconfirmed rumors that was out there that people were throwing around on Facebook and stuff is that everybody kind of knew about this $14 million. Some of the rumors was that Mike Thomas was asked, Aldo Petrino was asked about providing this shortfall, and they weren't getting it. And that's what kind of led to this whole emergency meeting and so forth. Like I said, the auditors are going to make sure that all this information is out there. The fact that this software is out there, when this whole thing started, and I was reporting and covering this, you know, there were a lot of things out there that I questioned, because I came from the MBTA. I worked there for 23 years. I was a superintendent, so I handled budgets. I handled putting in payroll, and everything's coded. So when people say that, you know, that there's these allegations of embezzlement and things of that sort, I'm like, it's really tough at this level to embezzle or steal or whatever. There has to be a lot of things going on. And when this gentleman pulled out the software, I'm like, see, here we go. I don't think this was embezzle. I think this was more of an overspending issue, and they're going to find out. And whoever is going to have to answer for it will answer for it. And a lot of this seemed to lean towards the purchase of the buses. Even up until this year, they have on the books that they actually had purchased, I want to say, 6 to 8 more buses. And as we all know, and you know, Kevin, that those buses are being stored at the Brockton Fairgrounds, and the city is leasing property such as that area for the fairgrounds where they are keeping the buses. We don't actually have a place to house all these buses they bought. There's no facility to maintain. And I come from transportation. They said I worked for MBTA for 23 years, and now I'm at Logan Express for Paul Revere Transportation. So I know how this is supposed to run and how it's supposed to operate, and, you know, the struggles that you can meet by having your own set of buses. One of the things I did notice on Thursday night was that the school committee is very committed in this to be transparent, and the mayor voiced the same thing. So I think they're headed in the right direction with this. Again, we need to let others do what they need to do to give us an answer as to what happened.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we have Keith Hayes. He is a local podcaster and a community reporter. He also, helps others do podcasts with the Hoobazoo. Does his own podcast called The Booth. He's been doing it for many years, but a lot of times, a lot of his conversations are hyper-local, and he's had a chance to speak with a lot of folks in the community, and especially this election year, where he's had a chance to talk with folks who are running for election. We'll get to that in just a couple of moments, but you know, just kind of going back to the budget shortfall, during the conversations on Thursday night, was there anything alluded to that this may have been something that there was, you know, early indications are, you know, because the mayor has said, it's been reported that, you know, that it isn't necessarily that the money has been taken and somebody is living a lavish lifestyle, but more so that there was a little extra spending when it came to salaries, when it came to, like you said, you talked about the buses, the school buses, and even having to lease property to be able to put these buses on. You have the Kearney property, the fairgrounds right across the way, and I believe that a lot of those buses are being parked on that property this particular time. Was that even touched upon either Thursday night or prior meetings?
Nothing about the properties was mentioned, but it was more so the purchase of the buses, security for school. There was nothing mentioned about the so-called, as you saw in these emails from Chris Correa, about these hirings of people that was off the books. Again, the auditors are going to go through that and see about that. You know, that email was damning. But again, who knows? One of the things, like you mentioned, and I'm going to go back to, you talked about this whole this oversight on this budget. One of the things that everybody is very, very clear on is that this money was not stolen, as we saw recently in Boston, where $400,000 was stolen from a charter school. And this superintendent took all of her friends and family members on lavish trips. The reason why this happened is because it doesn't fall under the school,
oversight.
And stuff like that. So right. This is how these things can happen. I don't see that happening. I don't see this coming out of this. I think, again, this is more like everybody's saying, it's an oversight. One of the things I know, this was coming out of that 2023 budget. And I know a lot of companies and people were having a hard time because a lot of people in 2023, they were losing COVID money that was been given to them for the last 3 years. And all of a sudden, you get this thing, okay, you're losing this money. Now you've got to make up for this money that you thought you were getting. And you kind of thought you were going to get this money one more year, and you plan for it and think, okay, we're going to get this money next year. We can just offset with this. And guess what? You weren't getting this for 2024. You're not going to be able to upset. And you wonder how many other school systems ran into this possible problem, you know, where you thought you were going to, you know, sometimes people handling budgets, they put the horse, you know, the carriage before the horse, so to say.
Yep.
Know what I'm saying? Yep. And I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of people out there who thought they were going to get more COVID money one more year, and they didn't get it, you know, and that could also play into this also, you know, and you can't damn Aldo for that. You could say, yeah, you shouldn't really speculate, but, you know, he'll have to answer for that. If that's the case, if they thought that they were going to get another batch of COVID money and it wasn't coming through and now they were stuck trying to figure this out, it's not something that you put somebody in jail for, but you do have to answer for that oversight. And, you know, again, this is something that we've never seen before and something we can learn from.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I'm talking to folks that I know in school committees. I've interviewed many people over the years, and knowing that COVID was, again, this is a situation that none of us foresaw. We didn't think that we're going to be cooped up in our houses and our homes and living virtually for 8 months to 2 years, and knowing that there were needs for finances on the federal and state level to kind of help get through this rough period. But you're right that one-time monies, a lot of times folks, you know, they would get that money. Again, whether it was COVID money, whether it was, you know, the CARES Act, you know, was ARPA money, or just circuit breaker money, money that is, again, one time only. Here's the money, grant money. You can use this, but realize that, you know, it's not something that you can plan for your fiscal years moving forward. You're going to have to, you know, it could be, the seed that you plant, and then you're going to have to find the finances year two, year three, et cetera. So it's interesting that you mentioned that. It's definitely an excellent point.
Yeah. And there's another thing, too, that we have to mention, you know, that's part of every budget, and this is something that most people who do city budgets, you know, when you have a budget, especially in school, especially in city, you know, sometimes there's money that is allocated and you want to use it so you don't lose it. As we know, you know, if you have a winter that's very, very mild, what do we usually see in February and March? In February and March, if we get any type of chill or any type of dusting, guess what they do? They salt the heck out of the roads. Why? because they want to get rid of that overage of salt so they can show that on their budget, because if you don't use it, you lose it. And we went through that with the at the MBTA. You know, that's state and city. That's how this whole thing operates. So you can see how that happens also.
Again, we're speaking with Keith Hayes, podcaster, hoobazoo.com, also a local reporter. And we're chatting with him about the Brockton situation. Let's shift our focus now. You mentioned, you alluded to it, you know, folks accusing the school committee of kind of, you know, dragging their feet because there is an election tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. You know, well, polls are open from 7 a.m., 8 p.m., 28 precincts, 7 wards around the city of Brockton. Are we going to see any surprises, whether it's, again, in those three particular races? You have school committee, you have city council, you have the mayoral race. Are you expecting any surprises? You've had a chance to kind of chat with some of the folks who are running for election. I think it's kind of a sparse field for at large, and sparse meaning we've seen years where there's like 15 or 20 people who are running at large and just to get, you know, 8 spots on the ballot in November.
Yeah, we've got 9 people, yep, looking at the at-large, and 4 of those, 3 of those are renomination. One of my worries about this upcoming prelim are people who might make the knee-jerk reaction to vote people out who might be tied up into this, yep, budget mess. The thing is that you really can't, if you're a voter, you can't make that knee-jerk reaction, because we don't know who's at fault. We don't know who, when speaking of school committee members and city council members and going all the way up to the mayor, we don't know who knew what. Let's let the auditors find out. So I hope people don't make a knee-jerk reaction and vote people out on this at this primary based on this tomorrow. I feel like these people should be allowed to keep their seats until the auditors, you know, come back with whatever they find. And then if the auditors come back with their findings before November, then we can let that vote be known at the polls in November. The problem also here is that historically, we don't vote. I mean, you vote, I vote, but
there's an apathy.
The numbers in Brockton have been atrocious.
Yeah, there's an apathy.
The people who are going to vote, the people who have knowledge of what's going on within this city,
they'll vote.
We're a small percentage of who's going to vote, and that's the scary part. That's the part that worries and concerns me. I think most of the people on the school committee and council at large, I think their seats are safe for this primary tomorrow. I think they're safe. I think the majority of their backers, those people who are standing on corners, the people who are doing the canvassing with them, are going to get them through this primary. I think it's November is when we're going to have to really look at this and see how this audit affects this field.
Well, while we have 4 or 5 minutes left here, I think probably the race to watch. Now, I will tell you, a month ago, I don't think this would have been the race to watch. When you look at the field of candidates, you got the incumbent mayor, Robert Sullivan. You have one well-known name who is known because of his business acumen and his involvement in the community. You have another business owner who has said some things and done some things that have shocked people. And then you have, I think there's 4 candidates total, including the mayor. Am I correct, or is there more than that?
Correct. No, there's 4 that are challenging his seat. We have Fred Fontaine,
yep,
who owns The Perfect Place. We have Hamilton Rodriguez, who owns, we all know, is George's Cafe, which is up for auction on September 29th. We have John C. Williams, who we know through the school systems, yep, and being a mentor. And then we have this resident, Richard Wayne Ripley, who's running.
Wait, Keith, I'm just getting this in. We made a mistake. We forgot there's one candidate that we forgot to mention that wants to be known as the smartest man in Brockton, Hamilton Rodriguez. I just want to make sure that we get this correct.
Actually, let's correct that.
Oh, okay.
He actually opened his Facebook page last week. He's running for mayor still. He a brand new Facebook page, and guess what he put up? He is now known as the head noble in charge, HNIC. And that disgusts as a black man,
okay,
because he is a guy that's been throwing around racial slurs all over the place. And now he has changed his platform before Tuesday, tomorrow, to be called the HNIC, Ed Noble in Charge. And we, me as a black person, I just want to chime in real quick here,
and I'm not being smarmy towards Mr. Rodriguez, but you know, our news department actually covered an NAACP event that hosted the candidates, and one of the sound cuts that played during one of the news breaks was indeed Hamilton saying that he was the smartest. So I'm basically just paraphrasing what he said.
That's right.
The other question, though, is, and which I don't know if it's been vetted out, but the thought is that he doesn't live in Brockton, but he lives in another community. I think it's called Canton.
And he started that himself when he threatened the woman, and I forget the woman who handles all this at City Hall, in it being national news.
Okay.
He started this because he went down to the registry and did a change of address. And that's what he started this himself, which is the craziness about this. But getting back to this mayor race for tomorrow, if I have to give my predictions, Kevin, I think we're going to see Mayor Sullivan untouched. I think he's definitely back in for renomination. And as much as I love John Williams and support John Williams, I think Fred Fontaine's history in this city for running for mayor, I believe he's going to be that guy that edges John Williams out. Fred Fontaine, well known in the community. Fred Fontaine, the last time around, he missed out because his papers were filed at the wrong place. He didn't get them in time, and he was supposed to be a write-in, which I blamed on his campaign manager. That was my opinion. The campaign manager should have caught that one. It shouldn't have fell on Fred. But I think we're going to see this race narrow down to Robert Sullivan and Fred Fontaine.
Yeah, I think, and again, John Williams, outspoken, someone who's very much a very fabric of the community, is a lot of events. I see him everywhere. I don't rule him out as being, if there's somebody who's going to be that individual that'll be on it, I think it'll be between Fred and John. Those are the two that I see.
John's your dark horse. John is definitely your dark horse in here. If there's a guy that I could say could sneak in here, it's going to be John Williams. But I think, like I said, I think Fred has been in this election process a little bit longer than John. That's why I think I want to give him the edge.
Okay.
Fred actually kind of rubbed people the wrong way last week with his comments when he had come out and said that he was the heir to Mr. Carpenter's seat after passing. Okay. And I think that kind of rubbed a few people the wrong way. I understand what Fred was trying to say, but you know how some people are. They read too much and then they use that against them. But I still think Fred has a chance to be that second person.
We got less than a minute left here. And the last question I'm going to ask you. Knowing that the mayor serves as the chairperson of the school committee, do you feel that this late news is going to have be reflective in the numbers that we see when all the votes are counted tomorrow night after 8 p.m.?
No, I think the primary is going to be the same number of votes that we usually see in the primaries. I think it's going to be very, very low. I'm actually concerned about the council at large. I think we might see some people sneak in there that we didn't think were going to get in. So, but I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to say anything till November.
All right.
On that.
Well, there he is, Keith Hayes, our guest. Keith, thank you so much for joining us and sharing insight not only on last week's recent school committee meeting, but also insight on tomorrow's preliminary. Folks, just remember that preliminary, the polls open around the city, 28 precincts, 7 wards, 7 a.m. Polls close at 8 p.m. If you're in line, I believe they'll take you right up until the last person. So keep that in mind. Again, Keith, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
No problem. Hey, just going to mention, people, there's open voting still going on throughout September at certain locations at the Shaw Center. So, and I believe they're going to be going during November, heading into November also.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to step aside just for a moment. Our final segment coming up, and we have Ann Jones Vogt. She's the author of Wake Up and Live. She talks about her new best-selling book. That's coming up in just a moment. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AABoston.org.
Fall is a great time to enjoy alfresco dining at the patio at McGuigan's. Start your open-air meal with a patio sampler platter piled high with chicken wings, cauliflower, potato skins, egg rolls, and chicken and biscuits. The patio's specialties include Koji steak tips, braised short ribs, pan-seared salmon, and chicken marsala. Looking for something lighter? Sink your teeth into a patio burger, pulled pork sandwich, fish tacos, or margarita flatbread. Friday and Saturday nights feature live entertainment at the patio at McGuigan's. Sip on a specialty cocktail and unwind from the week as the fall breeze cools down the evening. The patio at McGuigan's is at 552 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out McGuigan's Pub next door at 546 Washington Street, also in Whitman Center.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See, there is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Attention military veterans, friends, and family members. You're invited to a tremendous free day of fun, food, entertainment, networking, and resource gathering at the Brockton Veterans Expo Benefits and Job Fair, Saturday, September 23rd, from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Join fellow veterans and military families for a free barbecue grill fest. Check out the military vehicle displays and enjoy the live music and free food. Get a VA disability claim established. Learn about all your state and VA benefit programs, or find the perfect job at the veteran-friendly job fair while the kids enjoy pony rides, bounce house, and other activities at the Kids Zone. If you ever served in uniform, this event is for you. Don't miss the Brockton Veterans Expo and Job Fair, Saturday, September 23rd, at the Boston VA's Brockton campus, 940 Belmont Street in Brockton. This event is free, and veterans of all ages and their families are encouraged to attend. For more information, search for the Brockton Veterans Expo at eventbrite.com.
On Friday, October 20th, join South Shore Health at their annual Moonlight and Miracles Gala, featuring a seated dinner, live auction with MC Billy Costa, and music by local band Hot Mess. This year's event at the Weymouth Club will support the growing need for emergency care in our community. In life or death scenarios, close to home emergency care is critical. Support these valuable services and purchase your tickets for the Moonlight and Miracles Gala right now at southshorehealth.org/gala.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We have returned for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Joining us today is an author. Her name is Ann Jones Vogt, and we're here to talk a little bit about her new book, her new best-selling book, Wake Up and Live, The Ultimate Guide to Self-Discovery. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And just so folks know, where are you? Where do you originate from? Where are you? Where do you live?
I am 20 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Grew up, born and raised my whole life.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am your everyday girl. I just turned 40. I went through a divorce. I just went through a transformation period with the weight loss journey that I've been on, where I've lost 75 pounds. I work full time. I have two boys that are my world. They're 6 and 9. They're amazing. And with everything that was kind of going on and my life, that's when I decided to start writing a book about it.
What was it like to initially put together an outline and figure out how you wanted to put the book together? And did you have any guidance at first?
So the crazy thing about that question is I get this question a lot. And truthfully, I started writing the book to myself. I never intended to actually write a book that I was going to publish. Everything that I was reading and looking for inspiration for, you know, said, write down your thoughts. And I just, as I journaled and wrote down my thoughts to myself and read them out loud, was when it turned, you know, when I thought, well, if I can inspire myself this way, then, you know, if I can inspire somebody else, that's worth it. And I took off with my idea, and I reached out to what I thought was like halfway point to a local publishing company here, and I pitched them my idea, and we ran with it. And you know, here we are. It was from my first entry till the day my book was released, I think took me about 6 months.
So, I mean, prior to wanting to write a self-help book, did you ever aspire to be a writer? I mean, sometimes I've had a chance to talk to authors. Maybe they might have written short stories. Maybe they wrote poetry, and then it would blossom from there. Did you have anything like that that you had done and experienced, and that also was an antithesis for it?
Oh, absolutely. I have enjoyed writing and been a storyteller since as far back as I can remember. One of, you know, childhood memories, I've always thought it would be cool to write a book. And even, you know, through my 20s and my adult years, it's something that was always in my head. I've been that friend that's that the deep thinker, the long text messages, you know, so it's something I've always enjoyed and have always wanted to do.
Now, at any point in time, did you ever, you talk about wanting to write, I mean, do you ever want to be someone who wrote, you know, fiction or, you know, or something that would be a self-help type of book?
There was books that I've like read. The authors that have always inspired me throughout the years were like an autobiography. I love the truth in a story. I kind of love learning more about that person and kind of learning, like, you know, whether it's you pick up on their sense of humor or you pick up, you know, something that inspired you from that person, or you hear, you know, a real raw, honest story. I've always been interested in that. And so I feel in a sense, you know, my writing, my book that I've created is very along those lines.
Talk to us, share a little bit of a glimpse into the window of some of the changes that the transformation you went through. You talk about weight loss. What else? What other things went along with weight loss? And how have you tried to use that to sustain? Because losing weight is one thing, but keeping it off is another.
100%. So I write about this in my book a lot. And for me, I not only, it's staying consistent with yourself. So I learned moderation. I actually learned the term moderation. You know, for so many years, I didn't understand that, you know, and I would make up excuses. Oh, well, you can, you know, do this or eat that, or you could skip that. So staying consistent, learning moderation, truly educating myself on the foods that I was eating, were my biggest winning answers, honestly.
Again, if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with the best-selling author, Ann Joan Vogt, and her book is Wake Up and Live, and she's sharing some details as she went through the process of writing this book. What was it like? I mean, what was it like to at least get a first draft done? Did you go through the process of having a first draft and then having somebody look at it to either say, oh, maybe you should add a little bit more substance, or maybe you might want to pare it down?
Absolutely. So my publisher kind of told me at the beginning, you know, show a little vulnerability. Vulnerability is, you know, I think what connects us to our audiences. It just makes you a real person, which that is what we all are. You know, we are all just real people trying to figure this out. But when I did get my you know, my first rough draft. And it was actually a really cool moment, you know, opening my computer for the first time and seeing my book formatted in a chapter form and going through and making the final edits. It was a truly awesome feeling.
Any situations I've had, you know, any author that I've talked to, there have been times that they've had to encounter writer's block, or maybe they weren't, you know, they had to get over a hurdle to kind of get past a certain juncture in the writing process. Did you experience that?
I did experience writer's block for a while. Well, not for a while, but at different times throughout my book. One of the best pieces of advice I got from actually my younger brother, he said to me, find your most creative time during the day and then narrow down in on that time. And when I just rearranged my focus. That like really helped me, like, okay, I'm creative from these times. And that's when a lot of my ideas I would come into place. It's actually on my last chapter when I finish up the book, I kind of start in writer's block form. And but the best way that I kind of came over writer's block was I just started typing.
So you mentioned earlier that some of the book, your favorite books are autobiographies. Is there any that come to mind that you've read and that you still cherish to this day?
I mean, I've always been a fan. Like, you know, I love Chelsea Handler's books. I read, you know, they made me laugh. You know, Kesha, I've read her book. You know, I'm also, You Are a Badass. It's not a, you know, autobiography, but Jen Sincero, I think that's how you say her name. She is an amazing writer. She's so inspiring, and I actually can listen to her books over and over again. I love them.
Now, is that something that you're hoping that your audience will take away from what you have put forth in your book, Wake Up and Live?
Oh, I hope my hopes in writing this book and publishing this and putting myself out there on this, you know, a platform is in hopes to inspire someone. And it's, you know, it's so amazing. I've had friends and clients and family send me like their favorite lines in the book or their favorite parts in the book or their, you know, something that spoke to them the most. And just hearing that, like in this short week and a half that it's been since released, this positive feedback from how it's positively impacted other people is, I mean, that's a win. It's a win for me.
So you have shared this with the folks closest to you. Any surprises to them, like of anything that you were able to put in the book and that caught them by surprise, but that they were happy to at least learn about somebody that they're close to?
So I consider myself honestly being like an open book. I don't think I really caught too many people off, you know, from surprise. But there were some things in there that maybe cleared the air for some questions that people had and were thinking about just different time periods or events in my life that were going on. So it cleared up a little bit of questions. But one of the most things I keep hearing people say is, we want more, we want more, we want more of the story. When are you writing a second book? So
I would ask you this, and you know, it's, I think for some people it's tough to, it's okay to say you're an open book, but there's certain information that might go into a reserve that maybe you don't necessarily, you're forthcoming about. Did you ever come to any juncture where you're like, going, I don't know if this is anything that I really want to make public, that I want for public knowledge, but you know, maybe there was some information that, you know, you may have reached that barrier, then finally said, you know what, it'll be good to have it in the book.
I know exactly, understand what you're saying. I did come to that crossroad when it came to talking about, you know, my divorce and some reasons for, you know, leaving my marriage. I chose to keep those out because I didn't want my book to be about that. And I didn't, you know, I think there are still some, you know, details and things in our life that we, you know, need to keep private. So, you know, I want to stay considerate to, like, you know, the people around me as well. So I'm going to say, I feel like I chose my words well.
And being a proud mom, you know, how old are your children, and are you anticipating the day that they pick up the book and read it to find out about how you were able to overcome so much at a certain point in your life?
So my boys are 6 and 9. We have an amazing, awesome, very open relationship with each other and talking and communication. My boys are so proud that, you know, I wrote a book and I see it inspiring them. And yes, they have not read the whole book, but there are parts that we talk about. There are some chapters that I've read to them because they've asked. And no doubt when my 9-year-old can fully read the whole book, he's going to, whether I like it or not. And so that is also one of my reasons why I stayed very well with my word, is because I do know that if not today, someday my kids will be reading this book.
And again, we're speaking with Ann Jones Vogt, and she is the author of Wake Up and Live, The Ultimate Guide to Self-Discovery. How'd you come up with the title? Where did the title come from? And what was it like? You get the okay that at least the contents, the inside contents, are good to go. What happens in regards to choosing cover art and a title?
So it's crazy you asked me this question because I love this story. I struggled with a title name. You know, I had all these tentative titles in my head, and a lot of my book is built on beautiful conversations I've had with friends and self-reflection. And I had this conversation one night with my girlfriend, and we were troubleshooting like what the book was going to be called. And, you know, she just, you know, she kind of said to me, like, Annie, like, how are you living your life? She calls me Annie. Nobody else besides my mom and dad. You know, how are you living your life? And it was this aha moment as I was leaving her, driving home that night. And I was like, oh my gosh, wake up and live. Like, this is it. Like, this is perfect. And that was it. And it just came to me. And I texted my publisher as soon as I got home. I think it was at 11 o'clock at night. And he's like, yes, yes, I love it. And, you know, the photos and everything and the shoot that we put together, it just all came together really well. Mike from The Dream Starters, who's my publisher, he has an amazing group of people that work with him in editing. And, you know, I showed them pictures I want. I gave them my vibe that I was on. And honestly, like, they helped me run with it.
What was it like to get your first copy of your book? Because that's a special moment.
It was. So I want to say I probably cried, if I'm answering correctly. You know, hell yeah. I still have it. I'm always going to have my very first copy. I actually signed it to myself. You know, I signed it. It's just in reflection of, like, you did this. Like, you did this. This is amazing. And then in that same package, I also had, you know, two books that I signed for my boys. And that was a super awesome moment that we had, enable them getting off the school bus and, you know, having her sign books for them.
So now what happens in regards to, you know, the book's only been out for what, a couple of weeks?
About a week and a half.
So any plans as far as doing book signings, or does COVID play a role in how much you're able to get out there and share your book and meet with the public?
So that is something I'm learning. COVID is playing a role in that. And so I'm trying to troubleshoot in my head some hurdles to get past that. I would absolutely love to do a book signing. You know, I would love to just, you know, have all, you know, anybody that's supported and, you know, to come and sign for them and share and thank them. I would love that. So I'm searching for some events or, you know, some places that will let me do it around me. But that's a real hurdle.
Now, is there a thought to do, you know, if besides doing the signings, anything you're doing online? Have you considered that and talked with your publisher about how to go about marketing during a pandemic? Has anybody given you any guidance when it comes to that?
I have had some guidance. I'm always searching for more. It is hard. I actually have said this to a few people now that, you know, writing the book was the easy part because it was just something that came out so naturally for me. And I just wanted to share my story and inspire others. This, you know, the promotion and getting my name out there is the hard part. So I have some things in the works and I'm talking to people and my brain's going and I'm just going to try to keep figuring it out. And like, you know, you giving me this opportunity to speak is amazing. Like, I am so blown away and so happy.
Let's talk about social media because that's where I discovered you. And I, mm-hmm. you know, and so, I mean, has that been a helpful tool for you to be able to share your book?
Absolutely. It was really kind of great. You know, I geared my following up to, you know, letting them know like there was something in the works and, you know, we had to be secretive about it until the title, you know, we were able to drop it. But my social media following is amazing. My people are like, I mean, my girls, the guys, like they're so great. They're so positive. And I loved, you know, I love the pictures and like, you know, we bought your book and the reposts and the shares and the tags. And like, I just felt so much love from it. So social media has been a huge help for me.
Talk to me about any outreach from the readers. Have you had any readers who have either reached out to you or maybe they have posted, on Amazon and bought your book and wanted to leave a comment? Have you had any of that?
I've had a lot of that. I've had a lot of that. I've had some personal attacks, which was something, you know, I was told to be prepared for. We're not going to, you know, personal, it is what it is. I'm open to constructive criticism. I believe that's how we learn. So I appreciate a real, true, honest review. And 100%, I've had a lot of people, you know, reach out. Some I know and some I don't. And, you know, I'm making a lot of new connections. It's great.
Do you have anybody who might have been walking in the same shoes that you previously wore as to needing some kind of a direction or some kind of assistance, but didn't know how to take the steps like you did? Have you heard from any moms out there who are going through this?
Yes, all the time, daily. And that is one of the reasons that I think inspired me so much to actually put this all in a book form and let everybody read it. So many mothers and other women just, you know, about fitness and staying consistent and how do you do it and can I have tips? And you know, I posted about a month ago when I was officially divorced, I wrote, you know, I kind of wrote a little thing saying, you know, no one, like a true statement about it. And I woke up the next morning with 20 messages in my inbox, and they were beautiful messages from men, women, you know, that have gone through it and have struggled. And it's like they told a little bit of their story, and then, you know, and then they encouraged me to give me strength to get through mine. And it's just been a beautiful thing. It's been great.
So we're coming to the end of our conversation here. We got a couple of minutes left. We are speaking with Ann Jones Vogt, and we're talking with her about her book, Wake Up and Live. And I believe it's not only a bestseller. What else is it? You've also been nominated for something else, right?
Number one new release on Amazon.
How's that feel?
Yes. Oh my God, it feels unreal. It feels amazing. You know, it's. I'm proud of myself. I'm proud.
As you should be, because you know it's never easy. As we get older, we're tougher on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Life doesn't come with a handbook. And right. The best way for us to be able to kind of get through is by the assistance of others. And I believe that you're seeing success because others, your message and what you've been through has resonated with others. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. You know, one of my big messages, I think I spread across my book in so many ways. And it's the simplest message is, you know, we just do. Like, you just do it. And, you know, we can fall and we can fail and we can mess up, but it's getting back up because we all are going to do that. And so it's just getting through. So yes, it's been great.
So I know we're you know, you're only going on 2 weeks and having this book out and it being a tremendous success. And you teased it earlier with folks saying, is there more? Well, I mean, are you already considering other projects? Are you considering continuing your legacy as an author and doing an extension to what you've written or something else?
I am. So my goal for, you know, I want to say within the next couple of months is I want to start my own podcast. And I think that's going to be one way to continue to reach other people and create the platform. And 100% I see myself writing another book. It's been so much fun. It's been great. So yes, I see this happen.
So if there's someone who's out there who's considering, maybe they don't want to do kind of a self-help book like you did, but that they're thinking about, you know, I've always wanted to write a book, regardless of what category it may be. Maybe they might want to write something that's fictional, or you know, maybe they might want to write a book of poetry. What would you give them for advice in regards to if they want to, in fact, be an author like you?
So that's came up so many times. The amount of people that have said that they've wanted to do that, that they've inspired to do that. And my advice to them is do it, you know, just do it. My publisher at the Dream Starters, Mike, he is amazing. And I give his name out to everybody and, you know, do it. Whatever book it is, if that's your dream, if that's your want, you know, go for it.
So again, we are speaking with Ann Jones Vogt. Ann, if folks want to find your book, we've kind of teased it's on Amazon. Is it just strictly hard copy, or are there other ways for folks to be able to enjoy your book?
So we have a hard copy. There is a softback, and it's the downloaded Kindle version is available for a download.
Excellent. Now, are you working on a website, or is there a way for folks to be able to kind of follow what you do? So if you are going to be doing a podcast or writing another book, they can.
Anybody can follow me on AnnJones_vote76 on my Instagram, or AnnVote on Facebook. I am in the process of, you know, trying to create business pages and discussion groups. There's just a lot to do, but yeah, absolutely. You know, find my page, follow me, shoot me a message, say, hey, this is, you know, how I heard. And I would love to hear from anybody. I think it's amazing.
And I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I 100% appreciate this opportunity.
And with that is all the time that we have been given. Fear not, though. We will be back next week at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have a great evening. You've been tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.